Okay.
She almost let me go to the Sheeran Man, but then I decided I'm not going to be different.
All right, so we are holding on Membez on the Bays about 12 lines from the bottom line against Machna Shlishis. Okay, so we discussed the idea that the skila or any of the other misses based in, for that matter, has to take place A, outside the based in, and B, outside the three machnas. So we said in the Gemara yesterday, even if the based in themselves, for whatever reason, is sitting outside the three machnas, you still need the makam skila, the base of skila, to be some distance away from based in. We started discussing.
We did
most of my base. Where historically the base of skila was, I don't know. It was probably, it didn't necessarily have to be one fixed place, wherever they had a space that was available. Okay, so we started discussing then how we know that. And we said, we learned from the fact that by the Makalel, by the end of Parashas Emor, it says that he has to be executed Mechutz L'Machne. You have three different other places in the Torah where it says he has to be taken out, that something has to be Mechutz L'Machne, namely the Porim and Nisrafim, the power of the Kohen Gadol, the power of Helam Davashot Sibur, where the Sanhedrin makes a mistake, and the third one is the deshen, the ashes that are taken off the mizbeach every day, and because that's what we're saying, because we have Michut L'Machna by the Mekalel, who was in Nefashis, who was executed, and we have the word Michut L'Machna in those three places, then we say that it means by those things, it means that they all have to be done outside the three machnas. The fact that it says individually by each one of those three Michut L'Machna teaches us outside the three machnas by combining them together, and then we make a Gzera Shava from that to the Mekalel to say that he also has to be Michut L'Machna. So that's where we're up to. Okay, so Gemara asks, "V'leilaf mishchut echutz." The question is about 12 lines from the bottom, and beis and beis. V'leilaf mishchut echutz. Instead of learning from the parim and istrafim and from the deshen, instead, why don't we try learning from the case of shchut echutz, where the Torah says you're not allowed to bring a korban outside the azara, and there it's outside machne shchina. As soon as you shech the animal outside the azara, even in the ezus nashim or the harabayis or whatever, you're already chayim. Malahal and chutz b'machne hachas. Just as over there, thank you very much. Just like over there, if you're even outside one machna, then you chayev koris for it. Afkan chutz machna. That's the same thing. Maybe by the same logic, when it comes to executing a person, maybe also it only needs to be outside one machna. We could say that there also it says it has mechut. Oh yeah, sheyushchad mechut l'machna. That's what the pasuk says. The pasuk says, "Isha sheyishchat v'machne, oya sheyishchat mechutz v'machne." Well, pesach ha'omer lo yavino. So maybe mechutz v'machne over there means outside machne shchina. Maybe the same thing over here. By the person who's executed, it means outside one machne. The answer is mistabrum and parim anistrofim havle lemela. It makes more sense to say that we're going to learn it from the parim anistrofim. Shekain hoitzei al mechutz v'machne, because you have a number of similarities between it and the parim anistrofim, which you don't have between the makalo or any other person who's executed by beis din and shchut echutz. Namely, number one, by both of them it says hoitze, take them out. By the makalo it says hoitze al mechutz l'machne. By the parim anistrofim it says hoitziu es kol haparim mechutz l'machne. By shchut echutz it never says anything about taking it out. That's one. Number two, machshir. Number two, you have that both by the parim and istrafim and by executing a person, the makalol. Both of them, it is a machshir. In other words, the mitzvah is accomplished that way. The mitzvah is accomplished by taking the parim and istrafim and burning them outside. The mitzvah is accomplished by executing the guy, as opposed to shchut echutz. Okay, if you take the korban outside of this mitzvah, that's not how you accomplish the mitzvah. That's how you accomplish the aveira. So it's not hechsher. It's not something it's not a prerequisite for the mitzvah.
Well, that's assuming.
What do you mean that's assuming? The fact is, shchut echutz, if you do it outside the azara, you chayev koris, but you don't accomplish the mitzvah by taking it out there. If I care, it's not hechsher. It's, yeah.
Who says you accomplish the mitzvah by the column?
You have. We know you have to execute him.
No,
we're trying to figure out. We know.
You don't accomplish
the
mitzvah
because we're saying, because in the case of parim and istrafim, the place to take them out is outside the three machnas. To accomplish the mitzvah, you have to take it outside of machnas. How many three? To accomplish the mitzvah of executing the makalo, you have to take them out of machnas. How many? We don't know yet.
Right.
When it comes to when it comes to shortahut, to accomplish the mitzvah, you're not accomplishing the mitzvah. Therefore, if we're gonna learn from where you accomplish the mitzvah, it's more logical to learn it from Parim HaNitzrafim, where in order to accomplish the mitzvah, you need to take it out of all three machas. That's what we mean, Hatcher. Okay. And Umachaper. And Umachaper, and also all of them involve Kapara. The Purim and Yisrafim, the complete Kapara is accomplished by burning them properly. The Makalel or any other mitzvah based in the Kapara for him is accomplished by executing him, as opposed to Shchut Echot. Again, there's no Kapara over there. Adirav, the guy's five cards. Yeah. Okay. The question is, Adirav and Shchut Echot Tavle Lamelech. On the contrary, shouldn't you argue that you can learn it from Shchut Echot, Shekain, because you have other similarities between them. Number one, Adam, both of them involve a person. The Makalo is a person, the Shchut Echot is a person who does the Shchita, the Parim and Yisrafim, the Parim and Yisrafim, the Parim that are being burnt. Okay, a person has to take them out, but the point is, they are the ones that have to be burnt, it's not a person, yeah. And Choyte, both of them involve Averis, the Makalo did an Avera, and Shchut Echot is an Avera, the Pari didn't do any Averis. B'nishama, they both involve taking a Neshama, B'nishama. Number three, B'neshama, they both have a similarity as far as you're taking a neshama. Skila, you're killing a person. Shochet, you're shechting Shchut Echot. As opposed to Parim and Nisrafim, they're already shechting while they're in the Azara. So there's no Nechilas neshama, there's no taking a creature's life. And
outside.
And Pigle. And a fourth similarity is that with Shchut Echot and Mekalel, there's no, that because you took it Mechot Samachna, therefore it's possible for there to be Pigle. As opposed to the Parim, conceivably you can have Pigle involved with taking it Mechot Samachna. Namely, Rashi says, let's say you shechted the Parim and Nisrafim, having in mind that you are going to take the Emurim, the facts and whatever of it, and burn them outside the Machna, the Korban would be possible. Strictly speaking, Rashi says it wouldn't be Pigle, technically, because Pigle is where you have in mind to do it at the wrong time. It's Machsheves Zman, it's Machsheves Machar. So it's not really Pigle, but it's not really Pigle, it's Possel, rather. So Rashi says the Gemara is using the Lashon of the Possel. The Lashon of the Possel uses Pigle for any kind of psul. As opposed to Lashon Chachamim, is we narrow down the definition of Pigle and say that means specifically Machshavas Zman.
If you're not Masechtas Tzvachim, they're not as careful.
That's probably true, yeah. Tosfos points out that actually the Gemara could have also mentioned the fact that Kodshim involved Noser and Tomei. They can become Noser, they can become Tomei, but we're only talking about over here things that are relevant to when they're taken out of the mouth. Anyway, so the point is, on the face of it, you have other similarities between Shchut Echot and the Makalo. So why don't we learn the number of Machnos from there instead of learning it from the Parim HaNitzrafim? The answer is, after all, Machshir and Machshir Odisle. Yes, but to learn a Machshir, to learn what's a prerequisite for doing the mitzvah, from another prerequisite for doing the mitzvah, is more important than the other things. That's the key thing, the fact that you need a prerequisite to take the Parim HaNitzrafim, you have to take them outside of a certain number of machnas to burn them, and by the same way we're saying, when it comes to the Makalel, to take them out of a certain number of machnas to execute them, it's more logical to learn that.
And that doesn't happen
much for the mitzvah. Okay, that's one answer. Rapapa says here's a different way we can learn it,
right.
How we can learn outside three machnas. Moshe Hechav Yosef, we have to consider, where was Moshe living? B'machna Leviyah. He lived in Machna Leviyah because he was a Levi. V'omalei Rachmana, the Edrusha tells him, Hoitzeh the Makalel Mechutz L'Machna. The Edrusha tells him, take the Makalel outside the Machna, which implies Chutz L'Machna Leviyah, which means outside Machna Leviyah, take him out of your Machna. And then a few psukim later, the last passage of the parasha says, V'yetzihu es HaMakalel Mechutz L'Machna. It says they took out the Makalel Mechutz L'Machna, implying Chutz L'Machna Yisrael. They took him out of another Machna. There you go. So now you have to be outside of Machna Yisrael. Next question is, Hayim Boi Lelasiyah. You need that last pasuk to tell us that they did as they were told. The answer is, Asiyah Behed Yekziba. Yeah, but it says that at the end of the pasuk. Uvnei Yisrael Asu Kasha Tziva Hashem as Moshe. It says Befeirush further on in the pasuk that the Jewish people did as Hashem commanded Moshe. So automatically that would include that they took him out of the Machna. Why does the pasuk have to specify that they took him outside the Machna? Must be to add another Machna that they have to take him out. So the question is, Elamath,
Israel to Levi.
First Levi, which was what Hashem told Moshe, and then Levi to Israel, which is what they did. Okay, the question is, Elamath, by that logic, what about that same pasuk says, Vayugumoy to oven? The pasuk also says that they stoned him, whether they stoned him with a stone. My Abdule, what are you going to do with that? Does that mean that you use extra stones? I mean, Lechura, again, if it says, Vnei Israel also, the whole pasuk goes like this, Vayetziru samakalam lechutamach, Vayugumoy to oven, Vnei Israel also kashet sivashem as Moshe. So the second half of the pasuk of Bnei Yisrael also means they did everything that they were supposed to. So if you're going to tell me that Vayitzi or Samakal on the Chutz L'Machna comes to teach us something extra, then Vayugamoy to Oven also has to teach us something extra. So what else is it there for? If it's just to say that they stoned him like the Eibishter told Moshe, but then we know that already from Bnei Yisrael also. We know it already because it says they did everything that Hashem told Moshe.
Right.
So what is it adding? The answer is Hahumid Boyle, yes, but they need that for a different limud. We use that word, Vayugim Oysa, for a different limud. Look at the Tanya, namely what we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says Vayugim Oysa Oven, it says they stoned him with a stone, implying Oysa Velovikatu. So the word Oysa means only him, his body, not his clothing, because as we will learn in a couple of blocks, as we will learn on Memhei, they used to take off the guys, they undressed the guy before, not completely, they left on something to cover his area. We'll talk about it in the Mishnah at the bottom of Memdala and the Gemara on Memhei. But we'll see. It's based on the idea that we're saying over here, oisei, that we learn from the word oisei, that it means oisei v'loi b'ksus, so that it means him without his clothing. We'll see in the Gemara there, there's a practical reason for it also, which is that that way he's likely to die much faster. There's nothing to cushion his fall. And we'll have a machlokus over there between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, what about the din, what's the din by a woman? We'll get to it. We'll get to it in a couple of days. Anyway, so we learn that from the word oisei. And what do we learn from the word evan? We learn from that that if he died just from having the one stone thrown on him, that's it. The skill was accomplished properly. Not necessarily. You would think the fact is, elsewhere, because the istrich l'michtav evan, the istrich l'michtav avonim. You need to be told, now you have, in this pasuk you have vayugim o'ose oven, but you have, by the makoshish eitzim it says, by the makoshish eitzim it says, it says that, that you take the makoshish eitzim out, and then they should stone him. There it says they stone him with stones. Vayugim o'ose avonim bayomos. So why does it need to say evan by the makalol and avonim by the makoshish? Like this. Because if the Torah only said the word Evan, one stone, Havamina, you would think it means Hechad Lemes Bechoda. It means maybe if he didn't die because of the one stone, Loi Nesi Achrini or Mistalei. Fine, then that's it. Then that point is Potter. You don't, you don't bring other stones.
That's stretching enough.
But you might think.
But why not? What do you mean? You have to execute him and he doesn't die with one.
But you might say, but you know what Lahavdil, in the Goyish world, they have, for example, you know, if the rope breaks when they're trying to hang the guy, then they consider it an act of God and they let him go. So you would think, maybe. Lahavdil, but still, Tosfos points out, you know, but nevertheless, you would argue that, so Tosfos explains like this. We know there's definitely the concept. The Torah says Yad Eidim Tia Boy Barishon Al Amisev Yad Kolam Bachroin. The Pasuk clearly says that the Eidim are the first ones to be involved in the execution and everyone else afterwards. So Lachora automatically that means extra stones. Tosfos says like this: if the original stone that the Eidim dropped on him still exists, then fine, we would say that maybe Yad Kolam Bachroin, or that everybody else then goes and throws it on him again. Let's say for whatever that stone no longer exists. Let's say as soon as after they throw it on him, it then rolled into the ocean and floated away or whatever. You would think maybe that's it, and then maybe he passed to the guy. No, therefore we need the word avonim. That no, he wasn't killed with the one stone. Then everybody else starts pelting him with stones. And therefore, kosev achmana avonim. Therefore, the Torah had to write stones in the plural.
That's the case of
by the makoshish eitzim.
The
kosev achmana avonim.
By implication here, one stone if you don't kill him.
That's the point. That's why the Torah has to write the word avonim. The kosev achmana avonim. On the other hand, if the Torah only wrote the word avonim and did not mention the word vayugim o'ose oven by the makalo, hava amina, then you would think meikra nesi tauti. Then you would think to begin with, bring two stones. We know we're going to learn later on in the parashah that what they did is they took one big stone and the Eidim dropped it on him or threw it on him, whatever. And then if he didn't die from that, then everybody else starts pelting him with stones. If you only had the word avonim, you wouldn't know of that concept. You would think, well, clearly you take a bunch of stones and start throwing them at him. Therefore, kosev achmana evan, therefore the Torah writes the word evan to mean that that's how it's supposed to be done to begin with, one stone. And if he doesn't die from that, then yeah.
Then you take
take multiple ones. Okay. So the question is, the whole high tanan nemar kolmar. Okay, Rav Papa has a very nice explanation about how we learn mechutz l'sholosh machnas and what you're doing with the pasuk of Bnei Yisrael 11. The fact of the matter is, his explanation was because Hosea is a makalel and Vayetzi is a makalel. But the fact of the matter is, the Braisa before that we learned yesterday and that we finished up with today mentioned a different limud for it, that we learn it from Chutz L'Sholosh Machnas, that we learn it from the Parim HaNitzrafim. So the question is, V'Hohai Tana Nemar Kama. The Tana of the Braisa had clearly said that we learn that we learn it from the Gzeder Shava of the Parim HaNitzrafim. How is Rav Papa, who is an Amora, coming and arguing with that?
With a Tana.
Yeah. The answer is, Ilu Lo Nemar Kama. You're right, but the Tana doesn't have to mean that Davka has to mean we learn it that way if it hadn't been said. If it had not been for the pasuk by Yetzirah Samakala Machot Lamachne, which then from Rapapa's limud wouldn't work because you'd only have one Hoytzeh Samakala, then Hoytzeh Oim Gzeira Shava. Then you would say the Gzeira Shava. Achshav Shenem Akra. Now that we have the pasuk Gzeira Shava Loitzarech, we don't need the Gzeira Shava from the Parim after all. Rapapa can still stick to his limud, and we're saying therefore that makes the Gzeira Shava unnecessary. Either it means, therefore, we have the Gzeira Shava now available to teach us a different limud, although the Gemara doesn't spell out what. The Gzeira Shava that we said, of Chutz L'Machne. Of Chutz L'Machne, yeah. So now that we have Rapapa's limud, we don't need the Gzeira Shava of Chutz L'Machne anymore. We have it available to teach us another din, if one is available. And also, the same way as we had the other day, the concept that sometimes even something that could have been learned with a Kavah Chomer, the Pasuk writes it out. So you also have over here something that could have been learned without with a Gzeira Shava, the Pasuk writes it out instead. There's different other explanations that the Meforshim have, including that, like this, the Aruch Haner, I think, for example, says that the Gzeira Shava is still useful to be able to tell us that this concept applies not only to the Makalo, but to all Mrs. Basin. Otherwise, we would only know it applies to that specific case. Okay, Rav Ashi, Omar. Rav Ashi says I have another way of learning. Again, Moshe Hecha Hava Yosef. Where was Moshe living? B'machna Leviyah. He was living and he was sitting and judging in Machna Leviyah. V'omalei Arachmana Hoitzeh Samakal Mechutz L'Machna. The Ebrisha tells him, take Hoitzeh Samakal, take out the Makal means Chutz L'Machna Leviyah. And within that pasuk itself, El Mechutz L'Machna means Chutz L'Machna Yisrael. Within that pasuk itself, you have the words Hoitzeh Samakal and El Mechutz L'Machna. So Hoitzeh Samakalel would mean take him out of one machne. El Michutz Machne means take him out of another machne. Before we even get to what the Yidden actually did, just in the command to Moshe itself, you have Chutz Machne Yisrael. Yeah. And when it says Vayetziu Samakalel, yeah. And when it says, well, this is a different way. No. Rav Papa was saying that from Hoitzeh Samakalel Michutz Machne means outside Machne Levi. Vayetziu Samakalel teaches us Machne Yisrael. Rav Ashi is saying differently. Within Hoitzeh Samakala, Mechutz L'Machna, within the command to Moshe himself, you have Hoitzeh Samakala means take him out, implying outside of the Machna that you're in, namely Machna Leviyah, and El Mechutz L'Machna means outside yet another Machna, Machna Yisrael.
So what do we do with the...
When we say Uvnei Yisrael, Vayetzir Samakala, when it says that they did, that they took out the Makala, that is Lassia. That teaches us that they did what they were told to do. So the question is... Vayetziu and Lassia comes to teach us that they did. Yes, the question is, Asiya behed yiksivu. It explicitly says they did, because the last half of the puzzle says, Uvnei Yisrael also kasher tziv Hashem as Moshe. The answer is, Hahumi boile, yes, but we use the word Uvnei Yisrael also to teach us other things that they did. Things that it doesn't explicitly say that they did. The pasuk says that they took him out like they're supposed to. The pasuk says they stoned him like they're supposed to. But earlier in the pasukim, it mentioned that they have to lean their hands on his head. They lean their hands on his head, and it actually says on the pasuk over there, like they say, you're responsible for your own death. We're not responsible because you're the one who brought this on yourself. This is only by Mikado, by the way. This isn't in general, but yeah. So we need the words of Neisrael also to teach us that they did that as well. And v'chad l'dchiyah. And another, also, we need to learn the fact that they pushed him off the platform first. Because as we know, as we're going to learn later on in the Perek, the first stage of skila involves that they throw him off a platform twice the height of a person. That we learn from a different pasuk, sokol yisokol yora yora. There it doesn't say in those stukim at all that. It doesn't not in the command to Moshe about the Makalo, not in the execution, what they actually did. So therefore, we need the words of Nei Yisrael also, Kasher Tziv Hashem as Moshe, to tell us that they did all the details as they were told, the ones that are recorded earlier in the command to Moshe, including the Samkol Kol HaEdeh Sidei Maroshe, and the parts that are not explicitly said in this parasha at all, but that we learn from other stukim.
So 8 amas is
not 8, well, so sort of 6 amas, I guess. It depends whether you look at it. Tosfos talks about in a few places, is it that the height of a person up to their shoulders is 3 amas and then their head is a 4th amma, or is it the height of a person from head to toe is 3 amas and then the reason why we say 4 amas is the space the person takes up, is if they can stretch their arms above their head. Yeah.
So one way of looking at it
is head to toe is 3 amas, and therefore, for example, because it depends what size an amma is. Remember, you have a Chazon Ish and Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noach. according to the Chazon Ish, that an amma is 2 feet. It makes better sense to say that the person's height, head to toe, is 3 ammas. Otherwise, what are you going to say? A person is 8 feet tall. Yeah. As opposed to, according to Rav Chaimna, that an amma is 1.5 feet. Then it makes better sense to say 4 ammas than it is to say 3 ammas, shoulder to toe. Okay, anyway.
Yeah. Do we know exactly? I mean, it's my focus.
It's my focus, yeah. Okay. Omrilu Rabbanan L'Ravashi. So the Rabbanan asked Ravashi, Ridach, fine, but according to you, Kol Hani Hoitzi, the Ksivim, the Parim and Israfim, fine, but according to you, all these different Hoitzis that it says by the Parim and Israfim, Mela, according to the Braisa, we use them all for the Gzeira Shava, to teach us 3 matzahs. According to the Papa, also fine, we had Hoitzes and Makalo, meant only outside 1 machne, and we still needed the other word by Yotziu or Samakalo to teach us another machne. But according to you, who say that you can learn it all from what Hashem tells Moshe, Hoitzes and Makalo, El Mechutz Machne, then why does it have to say all these Hoitzes by the Purim and Nisrafim? My Darshis, what are you Darshis with them? And the answer is Kasha. Okay. We're left with a Kasha on Ravashi. It doesn't mean it's a Stira to him, but it means we're left with a Kasha.
What could be answered to that?
It could be answered. One answer could be that maybe he would say that from the pasuk about the makalo, we would know only the makalo. We need a different limud to learn for other chayvim mitzvahs. The Mishnah said echad oimet chol. The Mishnah had described that you have one person standing near the Beis Din Shtibel with flags, and there's a horseman going along some distance behind the party with the condemned guy. And if there's a tchus pointed out in his favor, then the flagman signals the horseman, and they stop, and Beis Din considers the situation. Omer of Huna. Shitali. Now Rav Huna says it's obvious to me that Echad Evan Shenitzkoba, that the stone that the person is going to be stoned with, if it's skilla, the Echad Eitz Shenitzkoboy, as well as also the piece of wood on which the body is hanged, as we will learn later on in the Perek, that certain people who get skilla also, their body is hanged for a short time afterwards, the Echad Sayef Shenitzkoboy, as well as also the sword that a person is given herig with, the echad sudur shenechmekvay, or the scarf that's used to strangle a person is chayav chenek, obviously all of those kulam mishal tzibur. There's no question, all of those have to be bought out of money of the tzibur. My timer. No, because they bury it together with the person. We'll learn that later in the parak as well. So obviously all of those have to be paid out of the tzibur. You don't make the...
Who else can pay?
Well, the question is, maybe you make the guy himself pay for it. My timer, Dimidi Dea, Layaminim, Lay Zilva, Lay Siva, Lixil Napshe, because you can't very well expect the person to say, you pay the money for yourself to be executed. So there's no question those come Michel Tibber. However, the question...
Listen, I'm working on getting that money together. It's going to take me a while.
Good. Okay. However, Rav Huna asks the question, what about the things that we mentioned in our Mishnah? Sudur Shemenifinboy, the flags or the scarves that they use to signal, the Sus Shadot Ma'amidon, and the horse and the horseman who is going to go and stop the proceedings so that we can consider whether the guy's innocent after all. Michel Mi. Who do those get at? Michel Mihu, who do those get paid for from? Kivin da Hatzola Didei, on the one hand, they're being used to save his life, therefore Mididehu, maybe therefore they should come out of his own money. Oduma, or on the other hand, Kivin da Beijin, Machayvin Lamebid Bahatzola, since on the other hand, you can argue that Beis Din is required to try and save the guy in whatever way possible, and that's why we make this arrangement in the first place, to make it possible that at the last moment somebody can come up with evidence in his favor. And therefore, they're obligated. Maybe Mididhu. Maybe it should come out of Beis Din's funds. The two. And also, we have to ask another question. Hoda Amar Rav Chiya Ba'ashi Amar Rav Chista. This that Rav Chiya Ba'ashi says in the name of Rav Chista. Hayotzei Lahorig. We have a din that when a person is being taken out to be executed, Mashkinos Kodet Shalavona B'Kos Shoyayin. They give him right before the execution. They give him a piece of Lavona, frankincense, in a cup of wine. The frankincense is kind of like it helps numb him. So this way, between the wine and the incense, it kind of numbs him, so he doesn't feel the pain as much. Today should be Torah Daita, in order that his mind will be confused, and that way he won't feel the pain as much. And we know this, Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Tnu Sheikha La'ovid, V'yayim L'morin Nafesh, give strong drink to the one who's going to be lost, the one who's going to be killed, in other words, V'yayim L'morin Nafesh, and wine to the people who are bitter of soul. So the question, and Vitanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Noshin Yikoros Shav Yerushalayim Ha'im Mesnadvas Amu V'Yisai Son. The noble women, the rich women in Yerushalayim would volunteer and give and for the money for that, for the wine and the frankincense that are given to the person to numb him, out of our Rahmanas for him. The question then is, Lo Yisnadvun Noshin Yikoros. So if the Noshin Yikoros don't step up to the plate and they're not donating money, Mishal Mi. Then the question is, who's going to pay for it then, yeah. The answer is, in that last case, when it comes to the wine and the frankincense, it's logical to say that it comes from the tzibur. Fine, but it still costs money. Kivin dechtiv tnu, because the pasuk says it as an imperative, give, and then it's in the plural, tnu, you should give, or they should give, whatever, implying, midid hu, therefore implying that it has to be out of their money. That it has to be out of so yes, the Noshim Yikoros ideally should he could, I guess, but why would he? I don't know. I can't think of any good reason.
He's a teetotaler.
I don't know.
You know where that came from? The guy that was a teetotaler stuttered.
Yeah. Okay. It's interesting, by the way. So first of all, the Gemara has left open the question as far as the horse and the flag. The Rambam Taka Paskins, those also come Mishal Tzibur, probably because we have a suffix and Muhammad Mechaber Lavaraya. So, but I don't know. It is interesting, by the way. In our printed Gemara over here, we just have the statement about Mistaber Mishal Tzibur. It's just an anonymous statement, like many other anonymous statements in the Gemara. Mm-hmm. Reb Shuda Goin brings in his Igeres, and Rabbi Hanano brings over here on the daf that this is actually something that was added. That this is actually the answer was given by Reb Ravai Meiroi, who was one of the Rabbanon Tzibur'oi. I don't think we've mentioned him before. He's one of the Rabbanon Tzibur'oi. We have here and there in the Gemara things that were added to the Gemara by the Rabbanon Tzibur'oi. So he was a member of the third generation of them, which means that he's probably the latest Amora or Savora, whatever, to be mentioned in the Gemara. So our printed Gemaras don't have it, but we have that Girsa that he's the one who actually gave that answer, that Mistaber Mishal Tzibur, and that's back to how it's accepted by Allah. By the way, there's an interesting thing that the Medrash Tanhuma brings in this connection about this, that they gave wine to the person to drink in order to confuse him, in order to numb him, or whatever. It's based on that we have the concept of saying Sabri Maranon before making Kiddush or Havdalah or whatever, and in Minhag Sfar that they answer L'chaim. How is that? Because, so the Medrash Tanhuma says, because once they finish discussing, once the Dayanim finish discussing the case, then the Sabri Maranon, okay, Rabbanon, what is your opinion? And they would answer either l'chaim or chas v'shalom, the opposite. So therefore, when we drink a cup of wine, we want to stress that it's l'chaim, not like this guy is drinking a cup of wine to be numbed before he's getting killed. But no, l'chaim, we're drinking it, and that it should be for life.
So we don't answer the l'chaim.
So on minig Ashkenaz, instead, we say l'chaim just when we make a l'chaim. But minig Sfar, does they say it directly after Sabri Maranon?
We should say that.
And see, we have a different minhagim, have developed differently. But the point is, it's still the same idea. Why we say l'chaim on a cup of wine or mashke or what have you is in keeping with this. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Where does it say this in the Zenithanano? I don't see it.
You can see, you can see the second line from the bottom of Ravenachanano. Tirgum Rav Ravai Miroi Mistaber Mishal Tzibur Shenem Tznu Sheifal Oyvad. And you can see the footnote over there. Ayn Bigeres Rav Shuda Goin, that he was one of the Rabbanon Tzibur'oi who added his statement into the Gemara. Bominer of Acha Bar Huna Mir Rav Sheshes. Rav Acha Bar Huna asked Rav Sheshes the following question. We learned in the Mishnah that if anybody says they have something to speak up in the guy's favor, then we interrupt the proceedings and basically have to consider the new evidence. What if one of the Talmidim said, I have an argument that I can bring up in favor of him? And we learned in the previous parak that a Talmid has the right to speak up like that, and they even make him temporarily a member of the Beis Din, etc. V'nishtatik, but then he was silent. Then all of a sudden he had a stroke or something, and he couldn't speak anymore. Mahu. So what's the din?
What's the din?
So Rashi says, the fact is he said that he has an argument. He didn't say what the argument is. So Rashi explains the point of the question is, we have to consider, maybe we have to bring an extra dayanim. One of those extra dayanim presumably is going to hit on the same idea that this Talmud had. Fine, he himself is not able to express it anymore, but maybe we need to bring in other dayanim in case one of them can come up with the idea.
I don't know what this guy was talking
about. But eventually they might be able to hit on it if they consider it more carefully.
Sure. Not anymore for his diet. So
No, but the question is, so according to Rashi, the question is, does Beis Din have to consider? Well, it looks like there's evidently a good argument in his favor. Maybe we have to bring in more Dayanim in order to reconsider the whole case and see if maybe we can reconstruct what this Talmud. The Ramban and the Ran talk about various other possibilities over here, including that maybe what it means, the Ramban brings an explanation, although he rejects it, that it means that maybe we say in that case we have to dismiss the whole case, because maybe this Talmud would have actually been able to speak up and convince all the Dayanim. The Ramban says it doesn't make sense. What's the logic? We said before, he counts at most as a one vote. We're not going to say because he's in Shtatik, therefore he has more power. So Ramban explains differently that what it means is that maybe do we still count him as a vote in favor because he said he has something in favor, or maybe not, since after all he didn't say what his argument is. That's the question. The Ran says further that sure, he has to be able to say his product, because the Beis Din has to be able to consider it. The Beis Din has to be able to
consider it. You can't just vote, you have to say why you're voting.
You have to say why you're voting, exactly. Okay. Anyway, so the Ramban understands that the question is basically, do we count him as a vote in favor when it comes to counting up the votes? Or maybe not, because he didn't say anything in the end. And
because even if he had said, it wouldn't be an acceptable.
No, but we said before that if he comes up with a vote and if he comes up with an argument in favor, we said we can count him as one of the votes in favor.
If the argument makes sense.
Yeah, we said it, but we're talking about it, but that's the thing. Maybe we should consider his argument might
maybe
have made.
Maybe or maybe not.
Okay,
no,
we don't know. Fine. But, and the Ran adds another detail also, which is maybe we would only be asking the question if anyway the Beis Din was almost deadlocked anyway, like it was 12 to 11 or whatever. Not necessarily if it was, let's say, 17 against and 10 and then and 6 in favor or whatever, not necessarily we would bother counting the Talmud. And, okay. Anyway. Fine. So the question is, Mahu, so what would be the din? So, Minapeach Rav Sheshes B'yodu. When Rav Sheshes heard the question, he like blew on his hand. Like, what kind of a question? That's not a question. Nishtatik, what are you asking if the guy was silenced, if the guy had a stroke? In that case, I feel like Echabasai. By that logic, you could argue there might be somebody at the other end of the world who has an argument in his favor. The fact is, we didn't hear the argument. Why should we care? The answer is fine. Toss them like Ka'ama. But in that case, nobody said they have an argument. Ha'cha Ka'ama. In this case, at least the Talmud said I have an argument. Maybe we have to give that some. Maybe we have to give that some weight.
We didn't say which argument.
But again, according to Rashi, maybe we need to reconstruct what the argument would have been. Or according to the Ramban, maybe we should at least consider him a vote in favor. So what's the din? Toshma, the Amr Rabbi Yosi Bachanina. We see that Rabbi Yosi Bachanina said, we had in a previous parak, Echad min haTamidim shezika, if one of the Talmidim finds an argument in favor, umes, and then he died, roya noisa kilu chai v'omidim kaimot. We still consider it as if he was alive and standing in his place. In other words, we count him as a vote. So implying, zika in lo zika loy. Implying only if he actually found a reason, only if he actually expressed a reason, then yes, he counts as a vote. But if not, then apparently not. The answer is zika pshitali. No, because it's like this. We know for a fact, okay, we know based on Rav Yosi ben Chanina's din that if he actually said his reasoning, there's no question about him. Omar Tiboylo. However, we still have the question. No, but not necessarily. Maybe what does Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina mean davka if zika? Or usually, I mean, it's normally once a Talmud says I have an argument, usually he presents his argument. It's a very unusual circumstance that it should be nishtata.
No, so it should be implied that he said zika.
But maybe zika is just saying, Rashi says, because that's a normal situation. The normal situation is a Talmud says I have an argument, then he immediately presents his argument. But maybe he also comes to include even the case where he said, I have an argument, but didn't have a chance to express the argument before Nishtatik. So to Boilok, we still have the question. And the question.
In the case of the Talmud?
In the case of the Talmud, who said, I have an argument. Does Zika actually mean that he said his complete argument, or does it just mean that he said, I have an argument, and then he never had a chance to express it?
Then he got a virus.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we don't know.
It's still something. Then we said, Afilahu Chula, we said in the Mishnah that even if the person himself says I have an argument in my favor, then we bring him back to Beis Din four or five times, we said. Uvad Shiyash Mamash Bidvarov, we said in the Mishnah, as long as what he's saying has some merit to it. Okay. So the question is, after the Pam Rishon or Shniya, does that mean even the first or second time, we only bring him back if there's Mamash Bidvarov? Vahatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, Pam Rishon or Shniya, when it comes to the first or second time, Ben Shiesh Mamash Bidvarov, Ben Shein Mamash Bidvarov, regardless whether what he's saying has merit or regardless whether or not, Machzir Noise, we still bring him back. That's the Braisa says. Mikan Ve'elach, only after that, Im Yesh Mamash Bidvarov, Machzir Noise, only if what he's saying has merit to it.
The first two times,
regardless. Any argument he says, I have in my favor, we bring him back and let Basin hear what he has to say. If it turns out, according to this Braisa, if it turns out after that, after the two times, Ein Mamash Bidvarov, Ein Machzir Noise, if after the two times, then not enough. Amar Papa, you're right. Tagumum, Pam Shnei Ve'elach. You have to explain when our Mishnah says Uvad Yesh Mamash Bidvarov means the same as the Braisa after the first two times. The first two times, bring him back whatever he has to say. It could be he can't get his thoughts together, he's too nervous or whatever. After two times already, if he's not saying anything that has merit to it, that Beis Din should have to pay attention to, then fine, we say that we're not going to bother. But if he has, if Yesh Mamash Bidvarov, then we'll bring him back as many times as necessary. Question is, Minoyadi, how are they supposed to know in the first place, when they're first going, whether there's Mamash Bidvarov or not? The people who are going with him aren't members of the Beis Din. How are they supposed to know whether what he said? That's the question. If we're saying, let's say the third time. But let's say he came back twice and there was Ein Mamash Bidvarov. Or let's say even there was Mamash Bidvarov. But each time, fine, there was Mamash Bidvarov, but they checked into it and they found, nevertheless, the Beis Din. Each time,
they reconvened.
They heard him the first time, fine, it's true, what you're saying, you do have a point. However, nevertheless, we still stand by our position. Second time, let's say, each time, if we're saying that it depends whether Yesh Mamash Bidvarov, how are the people going along with him to take him to be executed? How are they supposed to know whether Yesh Mamash Bidvarov to know whether the third time to bring him back? But how do they know? When they're saying bring him back or don't bring him back, how are the people walking with him supposed to know the third time?
If he was brought in two times?
If he was brought in two times and Yesh Mamash Bidvarov, then we say we can bring him in a third time.
Right.
But how are the people walking with him supposed to know that third time? Is it Mamash Bidvarov? Is what he's saying makes sense or not? The answer is Amar Abaye Demasunin Lezuga De Rabbanan. What we do is we send along a pair of Tamar Chachamim with him. And that way, if they hear, they're the first ones to hear the new argument that he has. If what he's saying has validity, ain, then yet, Eloy, and if not, then not, then already after the third time. Because I guess two of this way, one of them might, I don't know if it's two Adim or. Whatever. This way you have, they're paying more close attention. Okay. The question is, the limsa lema ikra, in that case, why are we waiting until the third time to do that? If we're saying, what are the brides to say? And we said the Mishnah means the same thing. The first two times, no matter what argument he says, you bring him in. Only the third time and on, you have to start considering him Yesh Mamash Bidvarov. The implication is, the first two times, you don't even bother sending this Tamar Chachamim with him.
Right.
So why not? Just send the Tamar Chachamim with him the first time. That way, even the first time, you can see whether what he's saying has merit. And that way, you don't have to go through this whole rigmarole. The answer is, Agab de Bois, because since he's scared, he might not be able to, on the way over there, to be able to say everything that he's thinking of. This way, the first two times, you bring him back to the Beis Din Shtibul, this way he can calm down a little bit, and this way he can start organizing his thoughts. And that way, maybe by the time it comes the third time, he'll already be able to have his thoughts and organized well enough to be able to make a valid argument. So therefore, the first two times, don't even bother sending the Menachon with him, because chances are what he's going to say is going to be rambling anyway. Only the third time can we expect already that he'll be able to put his thoughts together. Mishnah says, Motzulay Schus, if they ended up finding grounds to exonerate him, Katru, good, then they exonerate him. Vim lav, Yotzali Sokol, if not, then he goes out to be stoned. Ukruz Yotzalafonov, an announcer goes ahead of him, announcing, Ish Pliny ben Pliny Yotzali Sokol, Pliny ben Pliny is going out to get skila, Al Sha'avar Aveda Plinus, because he did such and such an Aveda, Uplini Uplini Adov, and Pliny and Pliny are his Adim. They announce who the Adim are. The pastors, the Adim go along because they have to be the ones to throw the stone on him. But we're saying they announce as they're going, Pliny and Pliny are the Adim. Anybody who knows a schus in favor of the accused, Yoga the Yalamadol, come give us an argument. Abaya says, you also have to add the detail, not just what Aveda the guy did and who the Adim are. You also have to add the day and the time and the place. Because you might have somebody who knows, hey, wait a minute, those Adim are saying that they saw this at this place at this time, but I happen to know they were elsewhere. And then you rush to base in and be mazim. So if you don't say the time, they're not going to be able to do that, because how is anybody going to know? Then we said, we said that an announcer goes out before him, implying only lefanav, only right before, as they're going to be executed. Me'ikra loy, not any time earlier, for example, 40 days earlier. And here's where we come to the part that was censored out of the Gemara, because, as we shall see, it talks about a character named Yeshu, and there are many opinions that that Yeshu is none other than Yoel. Yeah. Mind you, I mean, even among the Rishonim themselves, there's a machlokas whether that's so.
Is that how it's supposed to be?
Okay,
you have any
tape? No. But under the Gemara, it's supposed to be a direct continuation of the Gemara. It's actually, it's printed a little bit smaller, but whatever.
Well, you just have to blow it up.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can tell that it's going to fit.
You have, for example, this isn't the only place in Shas where you have Yeshu mentioned.
So
you have also, not the end of Nida, but you have also near the end of Sota. We're going to have later on, and we're going to have a couple of passages later on in our own Masechta. You have in Shabbos. You have a few different ones.
Where did you get that from?
So I found, you can find the online, the Gemara's online, have the uncensored.
Where did they get them?
They got them from Nahadah edition or whatever. Yeah, they have more recent editions that have restored these things. Anyway. You have, for example, the Rabbeinu Yechiel, in his famous dispute with the Meshumad and a bunch of Galachim, he argued that no, Yoshka, Yozel, the one that the Christians believe in, is never mentioned anywhere in Shas. In other words, Rabbeinu Yechiel is saying the Yeshu that's mentioned in the Gemara is not, in fact, the one that the Christians believe in. The Rosh says something similar. He also says on the story over there in Sota involving Yeshu and Yeshua ben Fakir, the Rosh says this isn't the same one that the Christians believe in. On the other hand, the Ramban, in his disputation with the Meshumad and the Galachim of his time in Spain, said that it's 23 years after Rabbeinu Yechiel's. Rabbeinu Yechiel's was in the year 1240. Rabbeinu Yechiel was one of the Baalei Tosfos, yeah. His was in the year 1240, the Ramban's was in 1263. Anyway, the Ramban says, it was the same one. What about, we find in many places in Gemara that he lived in the time of Yeshua ben Fakir, which is 100 years before where the Christians put him. The Ramban says they falsified the dates when he lived because they wanted to put him closer to the Korban. Yeshua ben Fakir is in the middle of the time of the Second Beit HaMikdash. So they could claim that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because we didn't believe in him, or in order to make the dates when he was born and died match up with certain psukim in Daniel or whatever. So that Ramban holds it is the same one. He lived in Spain. He lived in Girona and in Barcelona.
The Ramban was not really he was surrounded by Christians.
Yeah, by that time his part of Spain was pretty solidly Christian. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, the other, who were the other ones?
The Rabbeinu Yechiel was in Paris, and the Rosh started out in Germany and wound up in Spain.
So Rabbeinu Yechiel
Rabbeinu Yechiel lived in Paris.
Of the pogroms and all that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So, I mean.
Maybe he had a reason to fly out.
Probably.
Could be. The Ramban would have had a reason to also, and yet he didn't. Okay, yeah. So whatever, it's a machlokes like this we're showing. Anyway, let's go on. So the question is, you're saying in the Mishnah, the fun of Ain, that you make the announcement right before the guy is being executed, not Me'ikra Lo, you don't make the announcement ahead of time, like for example, 40 days ahead of time. V'hotanya, but don't we learn in a Braisa? This piece. V'hotanya, but we learn in a Braisa, the Erev HaPesach to Le'ul Yeshu, they hanged Yeshu on Erev Pesach. Again, maybe it means the one that Christians believe in, where they also say he was executed on Erev Pesach, maybe not. By the way, in yet other manuscripts and editions of the Gemara, it doesn't say Yeshu. It says Yeshu Hanoitzri. It says Yeshu Hanoitzri. An interesting question. Why is he called Hanoitzri? The Maharil brings that the real reason why he's called Hanoitzri is Noitzri in Lashon Noitzer. He was created in the same way as every other person, from a human man and a human woman, not like they claim. But in order that the Goyim don't come too down on us, we claim that really that he's called a Noitzri because he came from the city of Nazareth. But the real reason is because he was a Noitzer, just like everybody else.
Anyway,
the Erev HaPesach Tla'ul Yeshu, they hanged him on Erev Pesach. Ba'akruz Yotze Lefan of Mem Yom Kodim. There was an announcer going in front of him for 40 days before. He was stoned and then hanged, as we're going to say soon in the Gemara. What the Goyim believe in it is a different question. Again, if this is the same one that they believe in, they may falsify the story, just as the Ramban is saying they falsified the date. Why not? Because they wanted to make a big deal out of it, whatever. But according to the opinions, that it's not the same person, there's no question. According to the opinions, it was the same person. Okay, it's not necessarily that the actual facts of the way things actually happen are the way they claim in their scriptures. This is the point why we're bringing this in, that announced it was going 40 days ahead of time, that he's going to be given skila, because he did kishuv, and he was a mesis of Madiach, he's convincing Jews to worship Avodah Zarah, and the announcer was saying throughout those 40 days, anybody who knows an argument in his favor, come bring it to Beit Din. 40 days, not just lefanav, like we said, and that's the reason why the Gemara is asking the question. In the end, they couldn't find any argument in his favor. So they hanged him Erev Pesach. So what do you mean, lefanav ein, and not 40 days before? Omar Ula, so Ula says...
Are you reading back to Gemara?
No, now we're still in the speech. So Omar Ula, so Ula answers the Tisvara. So what do you have Amina anyway, in asking the question? Bar hafuchi tzchosu. After all, is this Yeshu, is he somebody who normally you should be trying to be melamed tzchos for anyway? Mesesu. The whole point is the Braita is describing you as a mesesu madiyah. But the Pasuk says that, as we've learned previously in the Masechta, that a Mesis isn't given those extra chances. Once he's convicted, then that's it. We don't want to hear any arguments in his favor. So there itself, you see, there was something unusual going on. Ella, shiny Yeshu, the court of Lamalchus Hava. The difference is that this Yeshu was close to the government, and therefore, because the government would be upset if they just went and executed him right away, therefore they had to make an exception and announce 40 days before and give him that extra chance.
How does that fit with Yeshu?
So if we say that it was Yoshka, then again, not necessarily. Are there scriptures who claim that he was a man of the people and that he was convicted by the Romans and whatever? Not necessarily is that accurate. Again, you know, they may have falsified it for their reasons. If you say it's not, then not, especially since the Gemara places in the times of the Chashmonaim, the Malchus he was close with may have been the Malchus of the Chashmonaim. We don't know.
Yeah.
Like I say, a lot of ink has been spilled on this whole question. Yeah. Okay. Turn it up on it. We learn it up right. So, Chamisha Tamidim, Yeshu. This Yeshu, notes, you had five Tamidim. Again, what do we do with the fact that Goyim claimed 12? Never mind. They were called Matai, Nakai, Netzer, Ubuni, Vitoid. Some of them seem to be similar to there was a fellow named Yosef Klausner who lived about 100 years ago. He was one of the early Zionist leaders. He was the first president of the Hebrew University or whatever. He wrote a whole book about Yoshka, and he discusses this Gemara in the course of it. He wants to say that Matai would be Matthew. Nakai, he says, maybe is Luke. Netzer, he wants to argue, maybe is Andrew. Buni, I forgot who he says, and Toida, there's a character named Thaddeus. Okay, whatever, anyway. A few Lamasai. So they brought Masai into Beis Din to be tried and executed. Omalahu, he says to them, Masai Yehorig, should Masai deserve to be killed? But Hoksib, but Yabapasik, Masai Avevera Pneilakim. Masai will come and see the face of Hashem. Now, Rashi says about all of these, I mean, these are silly arguments, but nevertheless, because, as we said, Yeshu and his Hamadim were Kor of Lamalchus, therefore the Chachamim had to find some way. They couldn't just say, never mind, that's Shrutim, we can ignore it. They had to find some way to get rid of this, to disprove this guy. Amrloi, and so they said, yes, indeed, Masai Yehoreg, Masai deserves to be killed, just because you have another pasuk in Tehillim, Masai Yomus V'Avad Shmai, Masai will die and his name will be lost. So you see, the same way as there's a Masai in the Pasuk for good, there's a Masai in the Pasuk for bad. Asur l'Nakai, they brought Nakai in to be executed. Amalu Nakai Yehorek, should Nakai be killed? Hoksiv Noki v'tzadik al-tarek, it says don't kill the Noki or the tzadik. Amalu l'Ein, they said yes, Nakai Yehorek, yes, Nakai deserves to be killed. Just say, because you have a Pasuk for Mistorim Yehorek Nok. In secret, Noki is killing. The simple meaning of the Pasuk is in secret that Hashem killed the Naki. They killed the innocent people. But the Chachamim used it as Naki is the subject of the verb, that he's the one who killed. So therefore, yeah. Afu the Netzer, they brought Netzer in. Omalahu, he says, the Netzer Yehorig, should Netzer be killed? V'hoksiv Netzer Mishar Hashem Yifre, but it says that Netzer, a branch from his roots, will grow. This is talking about Mashiach. It will be a branch from the family of David HaMelech. Yes, Netzer can be killed. Dichtiv, because you have another pasuk about Nebuchadnezzar. But after Hoshlach to Mikivrach, can Netzer Nisav? You have been thrown out of your grave like a disgusting Netzer. So we see that a Netzer can be a bad thing as well. Afiul Buni, they brought in Buni, Amalahu Buni Yahore, should Buni be killed? Aksib Bni Bukhari Yisrael. The Prophet says the Jewish people are my Bni Bukhari, Bni like Buni. Because the next pasuk says, David says to Pare, I'll kill your bunny, I'll kill your eldest bunny. Yeah.
That's regarding who?
That's talking to the Abishah telling Moshe Rabbeinu what to tell Pare. That because you won't let Bnei Bechori, the Jewish people, go from your land, therefore your Bechorim will die. A few of the Toda, they brought Toda in. Amal who Toda Yarek, should Toda be killed? Aksib Mizmer Lasoda. Amrulay, Toda Yarek, yes, Toda should be killed. Because the Pasuk says, Zeveach Toda Yechabdonani. The one who sacrifices, who chefs the Toda, honors me. So as Rashi says, Misha Yarek Toda, the one who kills Toda, Yechabdonani honors the Eivishtha by doing so. Okay, now we get back to the regular printed Gemara.
This is the real Rashi.
This is the real Rashi as well, yeah. Since we mentioned the pasuk Zeveach Todi Yechabdonani, so the pasuk Gemara brings another drasha on that pasuk. Amr Bishrobin Levi, Kola Zeveach Et Yisroi, anybody who sacrifices his Yetzahara, Umisvada Olav, and says Vidui on it. So Rashi understands that it means after the person ended up succumbing and doing an Avera by listening to his Yetzahara, he sacrifices, he kills his Yetzahara and does Tshuva, and does Vidui. There are other explanations, including in many places in Chassidus, it's brought that Zeveach Et Yisroi has a broader application. It's broadly what we talk about in Chassidus terminology as a skafia, controlling your taivas and not giving in to them. So a person who does that, and with Svada Olav and says video on it, Mala Olav Akosav Kila Kibda La Kadosh Baruch Hu B'Shnei Yavamim, the Pasuk considers it as the equivalent as if he honored Hashem in two worlds, Olam HaZeh V'Olam HaBa, in this world and the next world. The two nuns usually would be chabdeni. The word yechabdonani with two nuns teaches us that somebody who shecht is yetahora and toida, meaning he says vidui, yechabdonani does a double honor to the Eivishter. Normally the word would be chabdeni with one nun. But Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, also Rabbi Shurban Levi says in this connection, another pasuk right before that, Bizman Shabbat Mikdash Kayim. Actually, it's in the next epistle, but whatever. Rabbi Shurban Levi says, "Bizman shebeis mikdash kayim, during the time that the mikdash was standing, odam makruv oila, if a person brought a korban oila, good, schar oila biyada, then he has the reward from the Eibishter in his hand that he brought an oila. Mincha, if he brings a korban mincha, schar mincha biyada. Ava misha daita shvala, but somebody who is humble, mala olav shvala, he's humble. Mala olav kasev kila hikruv kol hakavanas kolon. The Eibishter, the person considers it as if he brought all the korbanas." Shenema, the pasuk says, Zivche Elikim, Ruach Nishbara. Zivche, the korban nois, in the plural, of Hashem, are Ruach Nishbara, are broken heart. This, by the way, the Alter Rebbe talks about in the Geras HaTshuva, the idea, usually, korbanos are addressed.
Zivche Lashon Rabim.
No, Zivche Lashon Rabim. The Alter Rebbe, by the way, points out in Tanya, based on the Zohar, usually korbanos are always associated with the name Yudke Vavke. Korban Lashem, Isha Lashem. This is the only place where Korbanos are associated with the word Elikim. And he says, because a regular Korban, of an animal or a mincha or what have you, is taka addressed to Hashem as Yud Kevavde.
Yeah.
But the Shuvah, which is what we're talking about over here, is on a whole different level. That's the Korban that you bring to Hashem in his role as Elikim, his Shuvah. That's the role of the Eivishter, not Havaya, but Elikim, right.
What's the reason?
Because Tshuva is, that's the point. Because Tshuva is higher. Tshuva is the whole. Elikim is in a way higher. Elikim is the power of Tzimtzum, which comes out. Well, usually we talk about that as the Nautic.
With
the power of Tzimtzum. No, but the power of Tzimtzum, which comes from a very high level. And of course, not only that, but when a person does Tshuva, when a person's heart is low, his tefillah will not be rejected. Shenema, the pasuk continues. That same pasuk continues. Leiv nishba v'nidka elokim leisivze. A broken and crushed heart, you Hashem do not reject. So we see that the Eibishter accepts the tefillah of such a person. Let's learn the Mishnah and whatever we can of the Mishnah, and then we'll. Mishnah says, "Hayorochik beis haskila ke'etz amos." When the guy is about 10 amos away from the beis haskila, we tell him, "Say vidui." Came derech kolam umosim misvadim. This is the way that should be. That anybody who's being executed should say vidui. You're not just executed. Anybody who's about to die, really, is brought in Shulchan Aruch, should say vidui. Shekhala Mitzvada, Yesh Lechelik Lelam Abba. So if a person says Vidui, they get a Chelik Lelam Abba. Shekhain Matzinu B'Ochon. Even he did Averis, but still, he does Vidui. Then Shekhain Matzinu B'Ochon, because we find that in the story of Ochon. The story of Ochon, in brief, is the Yidden had conquered the city of Yericho. Yeshua announced that all of the spoils from Yericho, all the metal utensils and things, go to the treasury of the Mishkan. Everything else has to be destroyed. Nobody is allowed to have any enough. No, not so much because of Avodah Zarah. There's a few. Rashi on the Pasuk says that they conquered Yericho on Shabbos, and he didn't want they should have benefit from what they conquered on Shabbos. Some of the Mepharshim say it was like Truma, it's the first place they conquered in Eretz Yisrael. Whatever it is, that was the rule. This guy, Ochon, ended up taking some of the spoils, and we'll learn the story in the Gemara, the details of the story. That they brought him in front of everybody and showed that he was guilty. Shenev Shalom Lo Yeshua. So Yeshua tells him, Bni Simna Kavod LaHashem Elokei Yisrael. Please give honor to Hashem, the God of Israel. V'ten Lo Toida and give Hodah, confess to him what you did wrong. And the pasuk continues. Vayan Ochan es Yeshua vayomer. It says Ochan replied to Yeshua and he said, Omna Anochi Chatati. Indeed, I sinned to Hashem. B'chazos v'chazos v'chola. V'gomer, I did such and such. And he described what he took. And in the end, he got executed. But how do we know that his vidui accomplished the kapara for him after his execution? Shenema, because the pasuk says, right before he was executed, Yeshua says, why do you cause us trouble? Because of him taking from the spoils, people were killed in battle, as we learn about in the Gemara. Yakur Hashem, Hashem will trouble you on this day. On this day, implying by Yom HaZeh, Ata Ocher, only on this day are you troubled. Vi Ata Ocher, Lo Elam Abba, you're not troubled, Lo Elam Abba, because you'll have a place in Gan Eden, because you confess. Vim Eni Adeli Svadis, now what happens, the person is about to be executed, he doesn't know how to save you, do you? Oimrim Lo, so we tell them, Emo, you should say, Tehemi Sasi Kapara Al-Kol HaVenosai, let my death be a Kapara for all my Averis. By the way, the Mepharshim point out, we do this before we give him the wine with the frankincense, because after that, he's too confused. Yeah, just a minute. No, we didn't. Rabbi Yehuda says here is an exception. Im hoya yedeya shehu mezumam, if the person who's about to be executed knows that the evidence against him was false, he knows the witnesses were Edom Zomim, but nobody came to prove that. Omer, then what he can say, Tehemi Sasi Kapara, I'll call the nice chutz me avoin ze. Let my death be a kapara for all my avoid, except for this one, because he knows he didn't do this. Amruloi, the Chachamim answered him, no. Im Kain, Yehu Kaladim, Oimu Kain. Then anybody who's being executed is going to say that. Kadil Naklis asked me in order to claim that they're innocent. You don't want to do that. It'll be a bazillion to Beis Din. It'll be a bazillion to the Edim also, to the Edim and Dayanim, that you're implying with your last words that they were false Edim and that Dayanim didn't know what they're doing. So don't allow him to say that. Even if he knows that he's Nezumim, just let him say the regular Vidui to him. He starts to be part of our following. Simon returns.